when, according to our Vipassana tradition, there should be a talk tonight again. Who's waiting for it? Remember this morning I gave a whole hour and a three quarter talk. Were you here, Pamela? It was an hour and three quarter, and then was another sentence and another thing said, and when we finished it was 2 hours. And do you recall of what we talked? Wasn't the main theme something about pain and discomfort? Remember that? Didn't we refer to what we heard last night about the five fetters or the five hindrances, those mental forces which compel us to act in such a way that it is hindering toward our self-awakening, toward our great sanity and balance of mind. So that is suffering, isn't it? That's pain. No?
Yes.
Yeah. He answers. Yes, it is pain. The others don't feel that. It is pain. We talked about pain, specifically about mental pain, although a lot of physical pain is created through these hindrances, these hindering forces. Do you recall anything from this morning? It felt good listening, I know that. But do we remember anything? Do we? Daniel? Hard to say, hmm? We. Karen? You recall a little?
Yeah, we talked about wrong desire, for example, how it created. How it came again and again, how unsatisfactory.
Very good. She very concretely she remembers. We talked about the force of desire, which constantly impels us to desire more, and how it creates in us restlessness and more desire, and therefore we come into a real devil's circle, so to speak. We don't come to rest. It is a force in us which creates suffering, not only for the mind, also for the body. Those who have the desire to drink, to take drugs, to eat all the time, that is pain for the body eventually, you see. So we talked about both. And when you recall the first evening, the day before yesterday, we, in our initial talk, I also talked about pain in connection with the five precepts. Who remembers that? That there is pain in life and disharmony in life when we are not following the five precepts. Do not take life, do not be not violent, don't steal anything from somebody. You might not like it. You create pain. Do not commit dishonesty in your intimate relationship, in your sexual relationship, and do not speak the untruths, and do not take intoxicants or any other drugs which do create harm. Mostly it was referring for physical pain, also mental pain. So it looks like till now we talked a lot about pain, didn't we, Elizabeth? Is that clear in your head? Do you realize that?
No.
Or are you still so full in your head, full of desire to have it pleasant? By that we do forget that it is not so pleasant right now. See? So it is very important to see that. And no one was of you really say not believing that. We all agreed it is so. There is this force functioning in us which compels us always to create some kind of pain, physical or mental. Not only one force, many forces, many mental factors do function in us and strive in us to express themselves. Yes, Elizabeth.
What about taking life for animals?
That goes with it. We shouldn't do that. Goes also taking life of all sentient beings.
Let's say I'm not taking life.
Yeah.
Let's say that I'm.
Butcher does.
No. If you eat meat.
Yeah, right.
I bought in the shop or something.
Well, if you want to be very, very direct and very straight, and you don't want that any animals are killed for you, then you don't go in the butcher shop and buy meat. You see? You can live without later. So, that is one way of handling that fact. Then that way you would help or you would not help inspiring people to kill animals to supply you with meat. So there is a lot of suffering, a lot of pain. The Buddha saw that very deeply. I wanted to say, and when we finished this morning about the 2 hours about talking about pain, I think we started a little bit in the afternoon, and I had an interview with Kirsten, and we continued talking about pain until she said finally, "Well, I learned a lot about pain, about suffering within and about anger," she spoke, "which also creates pain within myself." Then she said, "And that makes me understand a lot about the pain in others and the anger which also creates pain." And you see, this is what this is all about. The Buddha saw that very, very deep, on a much deeper level than Kirsten ever can touch yet. And he called this the pain we are experiencing, the suffering which is within our life, constantly occurring. He called it dukkha. Now that is not only meant the pain of the body, it is also meant the pain which is created in the mind, and also the pain which the mind experiences as painful. And he saw it so deep and so wide that he, after his enlightenment, even more so, that he was very courageous, turning around and talking to the people, telling everybody what he sees and what he saw and realizes deeply, that is, that life is really suffering. Life is full of pain. Life is sorrow. On one level, we don't even need to be enlightened to see that life is a pain and that life is full of sorrow. We just need to be very quiet and courageous and open and soft in ourselves and see how life unfolds. We get born. There is pain for the mother, sometimes pain for the baby. There is pain in growing up. There is pain in getting sick. And there is a lot of pain in facing, in getting old and in facing death. And that is for everybody determined. That is for everybody to live. And so that is a pain which is not outside of this living body, which is inside, within ourselves. And we should, the Buddha therefore doesn't tell us something really new, but only he calls us to look openly and to realize that more deep, so that we don't get wiped away and pushed away by our desire to turn away from pain and to not to look at it. And because it is so, we have somehow developed a very strange attitude, a very almost unrealistic attitude toward pain. We always like to get rid of it. We always like to turn away. We do not want to carry the pain. We don't want to go through the pain. We do all kinds of effort to run away. Of course, it's painful. And all human beings are striving toward happiness. That is also very natural. But if we are not looking at the pain and just striving toward happiness, we are running away and we are not looking at the reality as it is. And by that, we become very, very anxious and very tense and very striving toward happiness or toward pleasantness, and create in that way more pain, you see. So what is to do is to really attain a mind and a strength to look at pain, to look at it as it is. There is a Sufi master who said, when I see people reacting to pain, then I am thinking of some officials on the Persian, Turkish Persian border, where a kind of an old, little crazy but wise man was smuggling donkeys And always when he passed by the officials, they were looking in all kinds of places around the donkey, in the pockets of the donkey, underneath the saddle, underneath the tail, in the ears, everywhere, what this man is smuggling. Maybe gold, they thought, or that was what they were smuggling there, or the precious stones, and so on. And they always looked in the wrong place, because that what he smuggled was before their eyes. It was the donkey which he brought over the border. He came back and brought the next one over, and the next one, and no one could ever find what he was smuggling. So in the same way, the Sufi master says, we are doing. We always look in wrong, like the officials, in wrong places, how to get rid of our suffering, of our pain. You see, within the limits of this, of a certain degree of pain, pain is a very good object. It's a very positive thing if you have the right attitude. Since it is existing in life, why not have the right attitude toward it? So look at it rightly. So we as meditators of Vipassana practice, that is our task, to see the things as they are, not through a veil, not like we want them to be, but like they are. And in that way, you look at the pain, and you observe it, and you see, it's a good object of meditation, for my focus, for my concentration. In that way, the pain attains a quite different quality, and a different, it gains a different situation in your life. You don't run away anymore. You don't run to other places looking how to overcome the pain. You remain with yourself and accept it. So pain is a very positive thing if you have the right mind. Now, doubt. Right.
I tried that for over a year now.
You did?
Yeah.
You try again. You got it. You try again. So, there are different types of pains. If we now reflect upon pains, so just arising within our practice, arising in daily life, not really greater medical problems, but just coming from this living process. There's some pains, of course, like if you put your finger in the fire, well, that is a warning. That pain, just don't do it more. Or in hot water, or you come near where somewhere, you feel a pain, then it can be a warning. So then we know what to do. Don't need to react or to push it away. Somehow our common sense will say what to do. Now when we sit here and meditate, there's another type of pain coming up, which is all over my body, which is paining through my limbs, through my bones, through my cells. Who didn't notice that? It's sometimes it feels like it is I am nothing but pain. Although you know you are not really having a medical problem, So pain comes from this living process. So in that case, we can get up and stand, we can stretch, we can open up, we can get a relief and start anew. That is the very ordinary pain whilst we are practicing, and which, if you look at it very quietly and accept it as a part of this livingness, we know there is constantly a vitality in great motion. Blood cells are working, other cells are renewing themselves, the lung is working, the heart is working, the nerves are acutely working, the senses are working. I mean, this is a big factory here, and it is a burn-up process, so to speak, and that is just not without pain. When I sit quiet, it comes much more to my attention. I have time for it. Usually I don't notice it because I am so busy in running away from it or doing something else that I don't notice it. This is comfort. So one can deal with it when you have an open mind and you have an open understanding for that. You stand up, you lie down, you stretch, as I already said. Then there is the another type of pain which is more hidden and more deeper in our body, and we also experience that every moment in our sitting, and that is that pain which has accumulated as tension from old, from ways of living where we were not present with our mind, where we were talking fast, hating, being angry, jealous, resentful, frustrated. All these tendencies in which we expressed ourselves in reaction to something has made our body inside in muscles, deep in muscles, tense. You also can say these are the storage of our unconscious living, or the impurities have stored themselves within our muscles and cells and so on. So what happens now when we sit, I think a little bit we talked about it this afternoon, is that when the mind is quiet and collected and somehow open or a little concentrated, it has a penetration power and it begins to touch. It falls upon these tensions, deep ingrained and deep stored within our body. And then that power of attention, which is a pure force of mind, makes it loose and touches it and has some very good pure force of mind, and it begins to loosen, and it begins to flow, and that tension, and that is also very painful. We don't quite know what it is sometimes when we have pain, but most of our pains in sitting is this kind of pain. So actually, it is good when we have pain. In many ways, we can realize that we are softening our body, that we are releasing a lot of tightness and tension, and that we are also at the same time purifying ourselves. There is, let me see, there is a wonderful Sufis are very wise people. They have had lots of wise things to tell us after they have looked deeply into. They say here, let me say this first. You see, now, with regard to our reaction to the pain, in the course of time, we have developed special tendencies, special ways of how we are reacting and how we are meeting the pain. In most cases, and the most common one is that we are going into a flight, that we are retreating, and that we are feeling suddenly, yeah, nobody is suffering that much than I. And with this feeling, there comes also the feeling of self-regret and of self-pity. Who hasn't had that? This feeling, it's only me who suffers, and why am I only so much suffering? Gerd is smiling, it seems he has some experience of it. Mm-hmm. And why is it only me who experiences such deep hurts, and poor me? And it continues in that way. And before we know, we are in a very deep involvement of an entanglement with our mind. And by that, we create even more resistance to the pain and more retreat. We are feeling pitiful about ourselves. And of course, that is in no way a peace, a harmony for us, or a natural way to meet pain. And there is a Sufi master here saying, please overcome all pity, all bitterness that may come to you because you have not felt strong enough to deal with the pain which was entrusted to you. That is a very nice feeling, a very nice way to put it. I don't know whether you really understood the deep, the fine point here.
You can, if you read it again, Bjorn can translate.
Ah, so, Bjorn, did you get it? Overcome any bitterness that may have come to you because you were not up to the magnitude or to the vastness of the pain that was entrusted to you. Entrusted to you. You see, that was given to you by the universe.
You have to take it from the beginning one more time, so I don't get it wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's very important to get that. Overcome any bitterness. Mm-hmm. We were talking about self-pity and being bitter and sorry for myself for pain.
Att komma över all bitterhet.
Yeah. Now, the Sufi master says, overcome any bitterness that may have come to you because you were not up to the magnitude of the pain that was entrusted to you.
Magnitude.
Well, to the bigness, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, to the big pain. Forget it. Say it easy. is that?
Yeah. Vi kom all
bitterness.
Bitterhet, ja. Över att man inte var klar att omfatta den smärta som anförtroddes åt den. Ungefär så.
Did he do it fine? Ja.
Jag tror att det skulle vara som har kommit tack för honom.
Did he do it all right?
Some hard.
You see, the point is that you tell them that they should realize not to overcome the bitterness which they feel about the pain. They should realize that about the pain which were entrusted to them. That means it came. It came from the universe. It came from my living universe. It was entrusted to me from here. It is entrusted to me from life. For you in the beginning, pain is part of life, is in the living. And here he says, so don't be bitter. Overcome the bitterness. That may have come to you because you were not able to deal with the pain which was entrusted to you. That is actually easier, isn't it? That is very good to know. Daniel, did you get it? Do you get it? It is difficult. Uh-huh. In other words, it is said that we should see pain instead of we should see it as something coming from life, from my living process. It is given to us because of living, from the universe, like the universe supplies us with the sun and with the beautiful flowers, with the lovely fruit and the full fields and the cows for milk. It supplies us also with pain, with lot of suffering. It's also in it, you see. And we should not be one-sided and only look to the present, but see also really what is, and see when pain is there. And remember, this comes also from the universe. This comes as the good things come. This is part of my living process. Then you will not entangle yourself in the self-pity about your pain, that you are the only one who suffers. You see? And that calls upon us actually to be open and joyful, even when there is pain, in recognizing the universality of pain. Understand, Daniel?
Yes.
Universality of pain. Everyone has it. And so whatever is come to us, it is coming from the universe. And so recognizing that allow us, or should help us, to get out of that self-pity when we are caught in it, you see, and just believe it is our own thing. We are the only one. And you see, this is a different attitude toward life. Toward life, I say. I can say toward pain. But pain is part of life. And we should train our minds and really be alert to not get stuck in that. And when you feel that, your pain, and you think of that universality of it, you also can think that this moment you are carrying or sharing in the pain of the whole world. So much pain everywhere, everyone. So you are sharing it at that moment. You are participating in this force of life, pain. You see, that is entirely different attitude. And then we get out of that very bad habit we have developed. Most people have it, to sink into a self-regretting, self-pitying attitude. Very morbid and very self-destructive. Next one out of self-pity is what? Very much depression can come out of that. And retreating. And I would think out of depression could also come sometimes anger. You know. Yeah?
What's regret?
Regret?
Or no?
Sore, feeling sore. Ah, she did. So, now we have, I like to point out another habit we have developed in our relationship to pain, and that is the habit of just not wanting to go through at all, of fear, of pulling in, of constricting yourself and not being open to experience the discomfort and the pain. You see, the moment of pain, the moment I pull in and I constrict and I have fear, I'm afraid of pain, you are building up a barrier, or you are building up something around yourself and isolate yourself from the experience, from real life. And that is a very negative thing to do, to not allow yourself that experience. What you are saying actually is, by this fear of pain, is I don't want to be the uncomfortable. Of course, that is very natural, not to want pain and not to be wanting discomfort. But the thing is that we can we cannot always choose to really make a change and to get out of the pain. There are lots of pains and a lot of situation in life where you really have to go through when there is pain. You just cannot shake it off. And if we don't have the right attitude, if we go to it in self-pity or with fear, we are creating more problems and are enlarging the pain through this wrong reaction. And that is very good for us to know that when we react in fear to pain, we are isolating ourselves and we are not allowing the life in its full experience to come to us and to learn from it. Through pain we learn. And the Buddha himself says that to recognize the human plane of existence with its pain and with its pleasure as the most fruitful situation to learn for, and is the best place for training ourselves to attain enlightenment or wisdom. Well, it better be the best place. That's the only place we have. Have you ever thought about it? He is very wise saying that. You see, but if you really think about it, well, it is best to do. Because that's the only plane we have of life, where there is pain and where there is pleasure. And that is the only level of existence we have. So he says, that's the best level for attaining enlightenment. You see, we don't... It's wonderful to encourage us. to encourage us. He says further, if it were all beautiful and there were no discomfort and no pain, like it is said in the Brahma world, it is, or in the world of the gods, there would be no motivation for us to strengthen the mind, to train the mind, and to come to enlightenment. So be happy. So when we end up after all that, to really greet with an open heart the unpleasantness and the discomfort as an opportunity to deepen our understanding, to strengthen our attention, and to train our mind. So you see, there are different ways of responding to pain. So far we have just talked about two types of response, the negative type, the self-pity, and the fear. And we have come also now to another response, the opposite, the positive one, the one which doesn't retreat, which is open, which accepts, which sees the universality in it. It is a very much skillful way of meeting our life as it is, in its pain, in its discomfort. And that is a much more accepting way and a more way of openness and friendliness to live with what is there given to us, than to do it in that negative way. And so, as you remember, when we are working with our movements or with our assisting ways for concentrating the mind, what do we experience there, and what do I stress a lot, and what do we talk about a lot, is the softness of the mind, the softness of the body, the tenderness, the openness, the accepting. You see, that is the quality which is necessary for accepting the pain and for dealing with this discomfort. So if you think, if you have ever wondered why we do that, if you haven't understood yet that it is for the purpose of training the mind, or sharpening the mind, or sharpening attention, it is also for making soft our body, experiencing the warmth of our flesh, of our livingness here. And when you experience that, the mind gets open too. The mind gets soft too. And in that openness alone, we are able to accept the pain. Because we are actually in that openness, expressing the willingness to experience what it is, and the willingness also to relax, which means actually to experience. Yeah. Also, we should see the pain as a very good object for concentrating, for gaining power, for our concentration, for the mind, or for the ability to hold attention. When you have pain in your knee, or you have pain in your back, and you have the courage and the openness and softness and tenderness, encounter when you can meet the pain in this way and use it in this way, put it in the service for your concentrating power, developing or concentrating power, you are also very skillful in handling pain. Very important to know this and to deal with it, and to strengthen this quality. So, otherwise, if we don't do that, and use energy for this skillful way of dealing with this discomfort and uncomfortable situations of feelings in ourselves, we will just very automatically fall into the unskillful way of handling, into pity, self-pity, into reacting, into anger, or into fear of it. And by that, you rule yourself out for real deep experiencing and accepting life, and you also create more suffering for you, because you are going to look in wrong places how to get rid of pain. And that way is also a great way to come to balance, to inner balance. And it is an endless process. It is not just that we can do it within one course, or within one day, or within one experience. The mind needs to be trained for such response toward the painfulness in my body, because it has that strong tendency to forget, and to go into its old habit. And see, one deep understanding about that process of purification is very important, and the pain plays a great deal. So it is like the process of fasting, for example. When you fast, in the first days you have a great deal of pain and reaction and discomfort, but actually you are healing, because all intoxicants now are going to eliminate themselves, and you are cleansing the body by just not giving new food, by letting all the old waste materials leave the body. That is painful, but a process of cleansing and healing takes place. In the same way with us, when we are experiencing pain, it's also a cleansing process, and at the same time a healing process, because as you develop a good concentration and a good power of attention to the pain, to discomfort, you have overcome fear and you don't react to self-pity. You are developing a great healing power for yourself. And as you are observing the pain, and as you are again staying with it in patience and in accepting and in understanding, that is the greatest healing power. No doctor, no medicine can give you. Many people have been able to heal themselves in that way. Once more, many people have become enlightened or have reached high stages of enlightenment through using the pain as their object of attention. I'm saying that because I know of a very direct happening of this in Japan. When I was there was a young woman, 26 years old, and she was enormous, suffering from pain, bodily pain, and no one could help her, and she was actually a terminal case. So what she did, she concentrated and allowed the pain to come fully into her being and into her experience, and she accepted, and the attention always flew there. It was no reaction, it was no fear, it was just straight openness and softness of her accepting mind and body. And the master, who was my master at that time, went to her and gave her always guidance and instruction, how to, not instruction so much, but guidance, or how to continue in her practice of meditating on the pain. And just before her death, she attained high stage of enlightenment. And just before she died, she attained even a higher state of enlightenment. There are several different, four different stages of enlightenment. The first is not so safe. It's not. It is not subject or object of change. And then the second is much more stable. So but that can happen. A very close friend of mine was 56 years old, and he had a tumor, I think, in the head. And it was a little bit, he did not meditate, but he knew I did, and he had a great joy talking with me. He did not formally meditate, but he did practice some kind of attention to himself. But so yet when he was realizing he cannot get up, and he is caught because death was before him, he was very upset, and he was very fearful of the pain, and he couldn't let go, and he was fighting with the pain. And then one evening when I visited him, I said, listen, I talked very open with him. He had very great trust in me. I said, look, there is nothing we can do except that you take up your chance now, right now. and let leave all behind your reactions to this, your self-pity, your crying, your lamenting about it, your resenting it, your fear. Let go. Let it go soft in your body. Let it become soft in your mind. The universe has given this to you. Take out this chance. And from there on, he was very quiet and very accepting. And he couldn't speak then anymore. But when I came closer to it, he just would take you at the hand and kind of, so the touch of the hand I could feel, he says, it was good that you said this. I am going. See, so he had finally peace. He had finally probably higher good touches with the energies of wisdom or with the enlightened mind. And that way he took up a great responsibility for himself, for his next life, because as you die, you will continue in the next life. So when you die in fear, in self-pity, in fight, you will come up in life next time around quite upset already. So you are cutting and finishing off a lot of bad karma when you can give in such moments which are given to us from the universe. Can you do? See? That reminds me of my own pain I had, or painful, fearful moment where I really was convinced I died, and was very painful, and I also forgot of just giving in. When it is that close and the fear, then fear comes very automatic. Then one has to be very strong and very conscious. Or if you have meditated and have forgotten, you must have somebody who can shake and help you and remind you. So in my fear, I had fear, not self-pity, came very sudden. I asked my friends, two were with me, to call the Zen master in Los Angeles. It was 2 o'clock at night. And he had a Zen session going, so he really couldn't come. But he could have if he wanted. But instead of coming, he said to my friend on the phone, tell her if she feels she's dying, she should die quietly. Yes, that's for you. So that was a shock for me at the moment. I almost got angry at him. But that moment I remembered all what I should do. And that moment I also could let go. I said to my friend, now you light the candle, bring all the pink amaryllises from the garden to me. I want to see them all before I will die now. Die quietly. Mm-hmm. And I asked the other one to read to me the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows that book? Yeah. Very nice words. And I wanted to listen to them. I wanted to see the flowers and the candles. And I became quiet. I remembered what that meant. Die quietly. He said, you just know what to do. And I concentrated, collected my mind, first into the listening, then looked at the candles of flowers, the smell. I took notice of everything that was happening. Suddenly I could do it. I couldn't do it before. I was like a little just upset. And that word of him had, his presence would have not done it. His presence would have probably made me a little bit more small and relying on him, you see. But that word shook me. and suddenly I felt my toes, and I was already, I thought I was dead because I couldn't feel it. I felt my knees, I felt all the energies flowing through me, I felt my attention flowing over, the whole consciousness began to flow and to become conscious of itself. And I forgot about everything what was before, my anxiety, my fear. I forgot about dying. And I found out I couldn't even die. It was all fear. You see? Some symptoms were there, but the fear had locked so much that there was no ability of doing anything. And you can't probably die if you have that much fear, earlier than the universe has designed for you. It's very interesting, these things, and we are talking therefore of really very important things. I talk about pain, you see, well, not so much big deal. I don't think we talk about pain, it's terrible. What has that to do with enlightenment? But it has, you see. Everything we talk has to do with enlightenment or with our own life. And our own life is not separated from the pure seat of the mind, which is in us, or enlightenment. And enlightenment is not separated from life. Or tranquility, or clear mind. Whatever we may call it. So it is, we are talking about our life and how to handle it more skillfully and how to meet and accept all that what is entrusted to us from the universe. Don't ask me where we come from and why we are here. Buddha said, never ask this question. Be concerned with now and what you can do now. You will experience every moment where you go. When you are conscious at the moment of dying, you will experience. So, also you see, when we are not learning this, since pain is part of life, if we not learn the right skillful or the skillful attitudes and ways of handling pain, we give way and rise to a lot of other disturbances, to restlessness, to hate, to, as I already said, self-pity and fear and dissatisfaction and gloominess and wretchedness and all this kind of thing is then, or restlessness is coming up. I can tell you from my own experience, many occasions where I can just give you a direct report that it is so, that when you have pain, let me just say my last accident, where I fell at 1 o'clock at night from a bench which tipped over, and I wanted to save myself, turned around and then fell backwards on this hip on a very hard new cement floor in my old center in the desert. So that was 1 o'clock at night, there was nobody around. I tried to walk into my house, which is across the yard where I sleep. I could not get up. It was so painful. I just could not. I couldn't even do it on one leg. So what was to do? I had to lay there on the floor of cement. And as I was laying there, there was big windows. The windows go down to the floor, so I could walk, look out. I looked at the moon. I looked at the low bushes and the sands of the desert. I looked at the skies. And then I realized more and more that I am here and I cannot walk. something happened. I didn't understand what. I was very painful, and as I lay there and wanted to readjust myself, it became more painful. It became more painful, and it really was penetrating that the pain, my whole being. And I knew, I noticed then that it made me a little restless, but it made me wanting to get up, wanting to have help. Then I realized I can't have any. No telephone, no one around, I have to wait till tomorrow morning or some mercy. So, then I started just taking the attention and going into that pain and keeping on that pain and going in again right where it started. It was right here in the neck of the big bone in this part. And there is the head and the little neck, you know, the anatomy. And always again, but the pain was not just there, it was penetrating through the whole bone. And I kept on and again. And the minute I looked into the sky, and I looked into, well, maybe it was 4 o'clock, by then the horizon got a little orange, it got light, and the morning came. Then thoughts will come, it's somebody coming, maybe. And it's a beautiful morning, I can't walk. The minute thoughts like that I would allow, I was observing it, then the pain got different. Pain was nagging and aggressive and overpowering me. And then I noticed desire comes in and restlessness comes in. The minute I turned again on the attention right to the pain and allowed myself to lie down on the floor again, that was hard, that cement floor, and I had to deal with the hardness and the pain. So then let the hardness come in and the pain come in, and just allow more softness to the body. And again, it was all right. I was all right. But the minute you would, the mind would go away to something else or would not attend here, lots of friends come in and make you tremendously uncomfortable, tremendously discomfortable, and make you suffer so much more. So then by 9 o'clock people came, and I could get help. Everyone, when people come and see you on the floor, want to help you. Everyone knows a good advice. Oh, one said, yes, I had something like that. It's just strained a muscle. One cannot walk then. I said, if it's strained, very good. Then let me get up. I couldn't do it by myself. Maybe now I can. You stand there, and you pull me up, and when I will stand, I will just slowly come into my own weight. And I got lifted up, had my arms on their both shoulders, and then I was standing only on one foot, but I wanted to find out how the other foot was. So slowly, concentrated into that pain, how it will feel when I stand. And I did it. The pain I can't describe. But at one point when I was settled in and I had it, then it was too much. You see, there is a limit. So much. My mind was present and totally attentive, but the body gave up. The body had the protection and it fainted out. the body fainted. Yeah, my mind saw even the fainting. I could see it, but I had to give in. And then, after a while, I awoke and looked up and was on the floor again, where they picked me up. So I said, "Friends, it doesn't seem to be muscle strength." "Oh no, no," he said, "that's something else, sure. The bone is someone else. See, the bone is pulled out. I have a healer, I have a friend, who will push it back." "Ah," I said, "sweetheart, wonderful, very good. But let us wait before he comes and pushes it back. You go over there to the neighbors who have a phone and call the ambulance who can take me to the hospital. First, before he will push it back, I want to see the x-ray." So by then it was quite late in the day, and I hadn't cried yet, and I hadn't did a sound, nothing, just always watching, always holding. Then the ambulance came, and you know that if there is no no road, no cement road, real dirt road, and the car goes like this, rolls like on waves, like a boat on waves, because it's sand. So they came and they pulled me over to a kind of a stretcher, a board, piece of plywood, and they pushed me in the car, and then it rolled. The car rolled all kinds of way, very slowly, but every time it rolled, it gave a very nice flavor to life, of a special, not only what I already had, this was a great opportunity to stay with that. And well, then I saw the air when I arrived. I got to the x-ray, and then the doctor said, "Well, it's a bad news, you have broken that bone, and you have to have an operation." So then I didn't want to stay in that little hospital. It was new and hardly completed, and there were very inexperienced doctors. And I had actually a doctor friend who does these things, in which is about 8 hours, no, not eight, 5 hours away. So then I was transported with a little truck or so, because the ambulance was too expensive, on the highway to the hospital. Also, no pills and no injection I took, but just with the pain. I had trained for that, I think, because when I go to the dentist and he does what do you call that?
Drill.
In very few cases I only take the injection, the anesthesia. Yeah, well, I don't advise you to break your leg. It is very painful. But I think I handled it very well and healed very fast. Still, still healed. But I was, after 8 days, out of hospital. And lay just a few days more in bed, and after 2.5 weeks I made the course, the first course in the desert. I couldn't walk then, not yet. They were carrying me on a board from house to house, because I couldn't walk, but I could sit. So So you can take life and pain and dignity as a thing which is given to you, and you can take up a skillful attitude, and you can use it also for training your mind. And then you are exerting at the same time great healing power, because I must have helped healing, because the doctor always said, you feel like a baby. Oh, what is your secret? What are you doing? So no complications, and very few pills, you know, not injections for pain reducing. Yes, and there were four others around me. Mm-hmm. Different. Same pain, only different attitudes. Understand? Constantly people are screaming and demanding and being angry. One was throwing the shoe, which was in her night table, against the door because the nurse didn't come right away. So angry about themselves, they cannot handle the pain. It's very natural. So they get angry, they get self-pity, they get fear, and so on, you see. That's, the world is full of that. So if you want to be a real good Vipassana student, or open liver and embrace of life, accept the pain as it comes, in dignity and in openness and in courage to experience it, you whatever else you will need, medical care or medical help, you will get. But never forget your part in it. You are human process in it, which is the most important part for in this event of pain. And then you open up to a quality which is very beautiful for life anyway. It is trust. You see, you have trust. You also open up to a quality in that which you can call humor laughter. You laugh about yourself a little bit. You can see, you can observe yourself that you are changing. You can change your attitudes. You can let it go, and you can be very little and very unhappy. And you can change it. It is in your power. You can love, and you can trust, and you can be courage and openness and accepting. You have to know that you are the master, that these things are in you, and that you can determine how you live, no one else. And great blessings come from that. You radiate quiet in that, in your greatest pain. People really respond to that, you know? It was amazing for me to see how some nurses, very nervous and very angry also at the other patients sometimes, how they became light and laughing and smiling and very because when they came to me, one said, "I like to come to your bed because I don't know why, but I always feel very strong when I go." See? So you're so light, your own light, which your own healing takes place here. It touches other hearts. So, that's why we do what we do, dear friends. We learn to see things as they are and to recognize them in their real reality, and don't try to run away when they are there. Don't push them away or neurotically feel attracted and feel enthusiastic about it. We just leave the process here and look at it, observe it, and are a witness of the show of your life there at that moment. And then you begin to live with less pain. You begin to live reducing your karma, reducing your suffering. And then you are aligned with what the Buddha said. You almost say then what the Buddha said. He says, I teach only for one reason, for the reduction and the reducing of suffering. So he took his part, but his part does not help us. We can take his advice, but we have to do it. So since we have the tool, since we have the ability of the mind, since we are human beings, an animal cannot do that, consciously awake to that. But in most cases, I think animals are very smart with pain. They are very quiet when they have pain. Have you noticed that? They are very quiet and they retreat. I have had several animals dying, observed. They go in dark corners, in dark places, and die. Don't complain. This pain. So, but we human beings have the ability to consciously awake to that. And to deal with this part of our life in such a way which is really human, which is wonderful, which lets us be sophisticated and not just pitiful little sufferers. That's why Buddha has such a beautiful smile. When you look at pictures, have you ever looked at a Buddha picture, a Buddha statue? Who has? Did you heard? Yeah, I think you all noticed that there is a very peaceful face, and sometimes even a little smile in it. Who noticed that? Just a subtle smile. It's not a great laugh, but a subtle smile. And then all that it expresses actually is the enlightened mind, which means also I have seen suffering very deeply, I understand it. It is there, but I have found a way. I have found openness of heart and openness of mind and strength of mind to deal with it right here. It doesn't touch me anymore. It is there, but it is not demanding and commanding me. So, dear friends, and I wish you all that diligence and that effort you can make, and that practice which you could do when you through which you gradually can come to a strong mind, to strong attention, to where you can determine your own attitude, a skillful way of handling the unpleasantness of life. pain or other suffering events, but you also can help at the same time others. Pardon?
The leaders, what was the
word? He wants with diligence.
Oh, sure, I can translate it. Not being lazy. Practice. Not being lazy. Don't you have that word in Swedish? No?
To not give up or something.
Ah, so diligent. Well, say not lazy. Make effort all the time with an alert mind, to figure out gratitude. So, my dear friend, that's enough for tonight. I've told you a lot of nice stories about myself. I've told you a few things of my life. Take it as your good example. Think of it when you yourself go through painful things. That helps also to remember such remember friends who have gone through such experiences.
I think about how whenever one gets pain in a society, everyone is so quick to offer you pills, and as if it's quite the opposite as what you say. I mean, no one has the chance to learn anything.
No, that's right. So when you've experienced pain here, dear friends, be happy. You have that opportunity. You have a chance to really look into your living process. Pain is there. You don't cover it up. Yes, you're right, Pamela. Not alone that. It happens to me often. When I go to friends, now in Europe especially, and they haven't seen me long, you see, they want to make everything comfortable when I come. And I just, before they have anything, had a chance, I sit on a straight wooden chair, because that's or if there is a little bench, I will take that to sit. And now with my condition, they have already prepared a horrible big soft chair with 50 cushions around. I would fall and sink away. Nobody would see me after that. Everything is aligned to disappear, to align to that. So it's almost an insult when I don't do that. You see? So sometimes I just must suffer. I must go there. I must suffer. Yeah, very, very much. We're so quick with running away from pain, covering up. Yes.
I have a question from the beginning. You talked about kill animals and don't kill the envy.
I didn't really talk about it. I mentioned it as a first precept.
I wonder, what about the plants like?
Well, then you don't eat them, darling. If you don't want to kill them, the plants don't eat. Maybe you eat stones.
Yes, but you shouldn't kill anything.
No, I didn't say that. I said all living, animals. Let's say animals. Well, as much as you can be careful with plants, be. I feel very sorry when I see trees killed. I myself wouldn't do it if it isn't necessary. And plants, carrots, or potatoes, since there is a necessity for me to live, it is a matter then of whether the carrot lives or I. And you see, you have to have a balance in life too. Life is constant dying, and plant life is not that developed than there is animal life, like the mammals, you see, different. If you kill a plant, I don't think that consciousness is that developed. It doesn't really have that self-consciousness, has no blood, is no mammal. But when you go to a cow, that's different. I would like to see you, what you can kill, a carrot or the cow. Mm-hmm. You see? So we have to have a balance here and see the necessity of life. The lion is also killing other animals in order to live. He cannot live from carrots. So life is eating life. But I think we can become more aware of how we unnecessarily do create suffering and pain through killing, sport killing, you see. Unconscious killing, on the window, the little bee which is buzzing there. Instead of killing it, you can open the window and let it go out. There are many ways to be conscious of that. And about animals for eating, well, it will not be eliminated. The world is full of needs for meat, and many, not all people are that sensitive and feel that, and you cannot teach them. And I can't. I must have millions of arms to do that. And just go out and tell them not to do that, they will kill me. You see? And there are some societies which have really no possibility than other than to eat meat. Like in the tundras, I think, or high in the Tibetan plains, there had to be killed the goat which was raised there. But you see, what we are doing now, we're just too much. We're eating all too much meat in every country here. Too much meat is eaten. Too much killed. Too much sport killing. I think the killing of the seals and the whales and all the wildlife is really not necessary anymore. We don't need that oil there. We don't need the meat from the whales. We don't need the fur